Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Tito's Handmade Vodka is America's favorite vodka for a reason. From the first legal distillery in Texas, Tito's is six times distilled till it's just right. And naturally gluten-free, making it a high-quality spirit that mixes with just about anything. From the smoothest martinis to the best Bloody Marys, Tito's is known for giving back, teaming up with nonprofits to serve its communities and do good for dogs. Make your next cocktail with Tito's. Distilled and bottled by Fifth Generation Inc., Austin, Texas. 40% alcohol by volume. Savor responsibly.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all. Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
I'm out of breath. I'm out of breath, man. That was quite an adventure. The Mets are down to their final five games of the season. And in game one of this incredibly challenging road trip to save the New York Mets season, they engaged in the game of the year. So we give you an instant reaction to Mets 9, Cubs 7. Destiny back in the hands of the New York Mets. Welcome to a brand new edition of Rico Bronya. This baseball game between the New York Mets and the Chicago Cubs featured every kind of emotion imaginable. Think about every emotion you felt over the course of these 3 hours. There was disgust, there was pain, there was excitement, there was calmness, there was anger. Like every single emotion you've experienced over the first 156 games, I think we experienced every bit of it over the course of this victory over the Chicago Cubs. We will go through great detail. We're also going to do something fun in a little bit. Obviously, as this game was going on, especially the early doings, goings-ons, being down 6-1, Jeff McNeil making numerous errors, Juan Soto not being able to catch a fly ball in right field, there were many emails to the RicoB@gmail.com. So later on in the Rico, we're going to reimagine the entire game through what people said via email. All the bad, then some of the good, then the bad again, and then the good. But where do we start? Here's where we start. I don't know what's going to happen over the next five games. One game is not going to make me confident or declare that the Mets are going to find a way into the postseason. I have no earthly idea what's going to happen. But here's what I do know. For 156 games until this one, the Mets did not have a signature victory. They had good victories. They had some nice victories, but they never had a special victory. We all know about the stat. They hadn't come back trailing after eight. We also know they never won a game trailing by five or more runs. But even in some of the better wins, some of the wins I've jotted down throughout this season and said, hey, that's a good win. Hey, that's the best win of the year. Nothing has been DVD worthy. You know, you win a championship, you put a DVD together. Every team has one, or usually good teams have one, and then usually they don't win a championship and there's no DVD. But this Met team, and I've said it a lot this year, they haven't had any special moments. Very rarely. We've thought about special moments. We've dreamt of it. Juan Soto would come up with a couple of guys on base against Atlanta, and we think, oh, this is the special moment. But it had not happened all season long. And there was certainly a worry that we were just never going to get one. You know, Frank the Tank, I know some of you guys may not love Frank the Tank, but Frank the Tank said something while he was on Evan and Tiki arguing with Positive Tommy. It was so funny, but it was so true. And I want you to listen to what he said. He said, you know, the amazing comeback show that SNY has? They have it for every year. Amazing Comebacks 2011. Amazing Comebacks 2013. Every random year in the history of New York Mets has an Amazing Comebacks 30-minute show. There wouldn't be one for 2025. It'd be 30 seconds. And it was funny, and it was over the top, but it was so true. He nailed it. He nailed what the Mets had been so far. Well, it took until September 23rd. It took until game 157. But I think what we just witnessed, or what you witnessed last night, if you're downloading the Rico, listening in the morning or early afternoon, the game we watched for the first time this season was a DV freaking D victory. Add it all up, the circumstances, the desperation, and then much like 162 against, or 161 against Atlanta last year, the absolute insane back and forths. I mean, the emotional tugs in this game were through the roof. You get Francisco Lindor hitting a second pitch home run over the fence in left center field. What are we all thinking? We're thinking the king is back. We're thinking there's our leader. There's our man. What a tone-setting moment for what potentially may occur, not just in this game, but over the next six games. And think about what happens next. What happens next is David Peterson, like he's been doing the entire second half this season, completely implodes on us. And it was obvious from jump that we were seeing bad David Peterson. So what turned from a nice emotion to begin the game turned into a disaster in which the Mets are going to the bullpen in the second inning. And they're down 5-1. Then they're down 6-1 because Jeff McNeil makes an awful throw, two awful throws in a row. That leads to a cheapy Chicago run. And as we're sitting there in the fifth inning, aren't you thinking to yourself, who cares that the Cincinnati Reds lost? Who cares that O'Neill Cruz and Dennis Santana did us some favors? Does it matter? This gutless team ain't going to take advantage of it. I was actually arguing with a friend of mine who's probably listening and watching right now. He was like, hey, Ev, don't worry. He's a Yankee fan. Hey, Ev, don't worry. The Reds suck. You'll be fine. They're a disaster. You'll back into this playoff spot. And I said, bro, have you watched the Mets since June? You think the Reds are mediocre, which they are. The Reds are an average team. I think they've proven that all year long. The problem is the Mets are even with an average team, or at least were even with an average team. I said, you can tell me how bad the Reds are. You can run them down all day. If the Mets can't handle their business, none of that matters. None of it matters. And that was the emotion we all had in the fifth inning of this game. And then, out of absolute nowhere, aided by old friend Dansby Swanson making a brutal error, they erupt. They erupt in such a huge way. Soto's four-pitch walk, Alonso ripping one off the top of the fence, which I got to tell you, when it didn't go out, it was another sign that the baseball gods hate the New York Mets. I mean, there were signs all throughout this game, and really this year, that the baseball gods were not fond of the 2025 Mets. Maybe it's buying Juan Soto. I don't know what it is. But after Pete just misses that home run, here's Brandon Nimmo, who I believe deserved every piece of criticism I laid at his feet when I named him the net negative from the three-game series against Washington. And Brandon Nimmo gives us a signature moment to tie the game. So now the emotions have gone from really high, really, really, really low, depressingly low, to, oh my God, the team showed fight. Then they take the lead on a clutch hit by Francisco Lindor. And then they blow the lead. Because Tyler Rogers needed to remind us, despite some good moments he's had here, nothing David Stearns has touched can actually turn to gold. And so our emotions now go the other way, because in the seventh inning of a tie game, raise your hand if you actually thought the Mets were going to win this game. I don't think anybody did. They were going to win this game? Late innings, you're looking at who's left in the bullpen. You basically have nobody left. I mean, it was dark. When Brooks Raley came into this game after Tyler Rogers gave up the blue pit and walked Matt Shaw, I saw Pete Crow Armstrong hitting a three-run bomb. I did make a bet before this game started, anytime home run by PCA. That's called emotional insurance. And when Brooks Raley struck him out again, we go from the emotions of, oh my God, we're about to lose in a painful way, to, whoa, look at Brooks Raley. And then you have the Francisco Alvarez at bat. 3-1. Will he get a pitch to hit? And he crushes one into the Wrigley Field wind, through the Wrigley Field wind, into the seats in left center field. One of those moments where Francisco Alvarez had every right to pimp dog it as much as he wanted. But think about all those emotions. And we're not even done yet, because now it's Edwin Diaz. Should he come in the game in the eighth inning? Should he not? We'll go into detail on all this coming up in a little bit. And Edwin Diaz comes in, and even in his sequence, retiring six guys and striking five of them out, you have to admit there were a lot of ups and downs during the sequence. When he's behind Carson Kelly 3-0 to start the ninth inning, I'm not feeling good. When he gets a gift, maybe the baseball gods turning back in our direction, on a 3-1 pitch that's clearly ball four, and he gets tied up and checks his swing and tips it into the glove of Alvarez, into him swinging at a slider well off the plate. Like, there were emotions up, they were down, they were all over the place. But when Edwin Diaz struck out Dansby Swanson, there was that sense of relief, sense of hope. And yes, it is actually okay as a Met fan to be excited. That doesn't mean we trust them. That doesn't mean we think they're going to win the rest of these games. But at least for one moment in one game, the Mets finally gave us just a great victory. A gaudy victory, dare I say. A shocking victory in which almost everybody contributed and they were able to overcome their mistakes. And I hope that this game, this victory over Chicago, may actually be a sign of what they can do over the next five games, which is save their season. Look, I said this about a month ago. It's been the case for a while. There's nothing the Mets can do to avoid the fact that the regular season is going to be a disappointment. Now, if they miss the playoffs, it's an all-time disappointment. But even if they make the playoffs as a third wildcard team with 85 wins or whatever it is, that's going to be a disappointment considering the expectations, the payroll, and certainly where they were in June. Nothing can change that. But what can at least change the narrative of the season, not the regular season, is to make the playoffs and get hot at the right time, which anybody can do. But they have to make the playoffs first. And we all know what's on the line here. We've heard Met haters say it. You've heard Met fans say it. I'm a Met fan. I'll say it. It's a disaster if they don't make the playoffs. It's an all-time disgrace if they don't make the playoffs. We'll be debating KD Nets, Rogers Jets, 25 Mets as like a debate on what was a bigger disappointment or black eye or debacle, however you want to phrase it. So we all know what's on the line this week. But the beauty is, or at least the hope is, deep down in my soul, is just get in. And then you never know. Not that any of us believe this team's going on a run, but you got to be in the tournament. And this win at least brings destiny back in our hands. We're still going to scoreboard watch the Cincinnati Reds and the Arizona Diamondbacks. But now what we know about these final five games is if the Mets win, they make the playoffs. It's in front of them now. And this game, from top to bottom, was a DVD kind of win. If this season does turn, if they make the playoffs, if this goes somewhere further, we can always look back at this game and say that's where it turned, because there were a lot of contributions. Now, let's go right to the beginning. Right to the beginning of this game. The Francisco Lindor's tone-setting home run was huge. I know it got erased immediately, but I think what Lindor was able to show us in this game with two big hits and three big RBIs, and remember, he got robbed in the third inning on a great play by Pete Crow Armstrong. Francisco Lindor reminded us of 2024 Francisco Lindor. Because, and I know we'll spend a lot of time on it during the offseason, the Lindor regular season has been, okay. And I know that's a testament to his greatness, that a guy could potentially go 30-30, which he's one home run away from doing, driving 80 runs as a leadoff hitter, hit 270, and say that's a blah season. But if you've watched him every day, if you've watched some of the inconsistencies, even defensively, he hasn't been his best, you'd admit, like, he's a wonderful player who has not even come close to what he did a year ago. And a part of what he did a year ago was he was clutch on a crazy consistent basis. This game was a reminder of what Francisco Lindor can be. Now let's get to David Peterson. This is going to be an obvious statement, but let's just get it out of the way. The New York Mets cannot start David Peterson again. And I know they don't have a lot of great options. It's unfortunate. They do not. And they're going to need someone potentially to start a very big game on Sunday, the final regular season game against Miami. Now, one can dream that the Mets have a playoff spot wrapped up that day. I don't know if that's going to be the case. They may be playing for their lives. They may need help that day. Who knows what game 162 is going to look like. But here's what I do know. David Peterson confirmed with this start that he is now unpitchable. There are guys who aren't good. There are guys who maybe only want to throw for two or three innings. There are guys you would send to the bullpen. There are even guys, as we saw, that you'll send to AAA, hello, Kodai Senga. And then there are guys that you cannot pitch. David Peterson cannot make another start for the Mets in 2025. We will have a full discussion about what to do for 2026. In fact, I'll give you a little brief preview, and this may not be popular. David Peterson should be in the rotation next year. There, I said it. I'm looking at what's happening right now, fair or not, and saying, guys hit a wall. Guys throwing a ton of innings. And as much as we try to minimize that, it matters. It's a factor. So I am not throwing David Peterson out. I'm not flushing him down the toilet. I'm not telling you they've got to non-tender him. I'm not telling you they got to trade him. I think he should be in the rotation next year. That's a great debate for hopefully November. But in September of 2025, no mas. And I got issues with Carlos Mendoza and the way he handled him in this game. Like, this is, and Gary Cohn pointed it out early, this is a playoff game. You can't screw around. You can't mess around. You can't be patient. You're also...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So facing Cade Horton, more on him later, who's been like the best pitcher since the All-Star break this side of Tarik Skubal. You can't mess around. So when David Peterson allows the two-run double to Carlos Santana, which should have been caught by Juan Soto, I don't give me the win. Don't give it to me. I don't want to hear it. He should have made that play. Will we live with those kinds of miscues when you also get 42 home runs and 104 RBIs? Of course. This is not about debating Juan Soto or if they should have signed him or if he's worth it. It's just about squarely calling a player out for not making a play. He should have made that play. Was it windy? Sure. Yes, it was. He needs to make that play. But even still, David Peterson didn't need to walk Carson Kelly, did he? He didn't need to allow Carlos Santana to drive one to the warning track, did he? And in the second inning, and here is the moment where Carlos Mendoza needed to be aggressive. I'll be specific. When he walks Justin Turner on four pitches, you have to get on the phone. You have a fresh bullpen, and not only do you have a fresh bullpen, you know that if you use all of it, which they ended up doing, you've got moves that you can make for Wednesday. Like, there are available guys to send up and down on the AAA train, especially now with the AAA season over. You can add fresh arms.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
But also, more important than that, you're a game behind the Reds. I know you're tied with the Reds coming into this game, but no, you're a game behind them. That's the way you have to treat it. You have to be desperate and you have to be aggressive. When David Peterson walks Justin Turner on four pitches, wake up. When he gives up a base hit to Matt Shaw, wake up. I'm done with him at that point. I'm going to be specific. With Pete Crow Armstrong coming up, you want to leave Peterson in because there's a chance PSA is going to bunt or PCA is going to bunt, fine. But once Nico Horner comes up and once Ian Happ comes up, he's out of the game. I'm over him. We all should be over him. And instead, he lets David Peterson give up a base hit to Nico Horner. And what does he do after that? He lets him face Ian Happ. Cannot happen. He should have been out of this game three batters earlier. With that said, he took him out, and Waskar Brazoban did an amazing job. An amazing job. Waskar Brazoban not only needed to get out of that inning and keep it 5-1, he needed to give them innings. I saw it in the second inning and said, he's got to hand the baseball to somebody in the fifth inning. He's got to find a way to get eight outs. And he did. And not only did he do it, he worked around Jeff McNeil forgetting how to play defense. Jeff made two errors in the fourth inning. I mean, my God, in that inning, you talk about the height of negativity over the course of this roller coaster game, more so than even David Peterson. When Jeff McNeil's handing over a run with two horrible throws, is not that not the height of our negativity in this moment? Is that not the moment where half of everybody watching probably said, all right, enough of Jeff McNeil. Not this season. He has to play. But next season. We're already thinking about how to game plan. Get rid of him. I don't want to see him anymore. We're all thinking the same damn thing. But Waskar Brazoban worked around that. And those who four innings of this baseball game, think about what we witnessed. Outside of a leadoff home run by Francisco Lindor, we saw the LD offense do nothing. We saw David Peterson get knocked out in the second inning. We saw three monstrous defensive miscues. Juan Soto can't field a fly ball in right field because it's windy. And Jeff McNeil makes two throwing errors. Meanwhile, Pete Crow Armstrong's making great plays. Saya Suzuki's making a diving play, robbing Brett Beatty. I mean, through four innings in a 6-1 game, with the Mets playing as if it's the middle of March and the Cubs playing like the middle of October. Are we not all thinking, my God, this is doomed? We're going to sit here for another hour and a half watching this crap, I guess hoping that the Pirates hold on and beat the Reds and hoping that the Dodgers beat the Diamondbacks just so we can remain within striking distance to basically get punched in the face the next day. And then you have the Cade Horton situation. So I love this analogy, even though it no longer works because we found out that Cade Horton was suffering through some back issues, and that's why he was pulled. Keep an eye on how serious that is, because Cade Horton is likely to be the Cubs' Game 1 wild card series starting pitcher. Obviously, this is not something that concerns us, because the Mets ain't seeing the Chicago Cubs unless they both go on runs and play in the NLCS. So, not something to worry about, but nevertheless, as a baseball fan, you do wonder about Cade Horton and how serious the back issue is. But when Cade Horton came out of the game, and we didn't know he was suffering from a back issue, and maybe it's a blister, or maybe it was Craig Counsell saying, you know what, we have a young guy. He's already thrown 120 innings at the major league level. We're taking it easy. You know, we're preparing for the postseason, even though we don't have our spot in terms of seed wrapped up. And so for a second, I got slightly excited because I thought long, long ago to when football fans, when the Indianapolis Colts were having that undefeated season and the Jets were playing the Colts in an incredibly important game and they pulled Peyton Manning. They pulled Peyton Manning for the immortal Curtis Painter. And the Jets, to their credit, took advantage. They beat Indianapolis that day. They took advantage. They beat the Bengals, who didn't want to get off the bus on Sunday Night Football. And yes, they were handed a gift, but the Jets took the gift and they made the postseason. And there were many people, Mike Francesa, one of them, who discredited the Jets' playoff berth by saying, well, it was cheap and it was handed to them. And my point to Mike then and my point now was, yes, it was, but you still needed to take advantage of it. Just because Curtis Painter was in the game didn't mean the Jets were automatically going to win. It gave them a better chance to win, but you got to take it. And then once they took it, they beat the Bengals in a playoff game. They beat the Chargers in a playoff game. And they had a real shot in what would have been the perfect symmetry to knock out the Colts in the AFC Championship game, the same team that let them through the door. So for about 30 seconds, I started thinking about the same thing. Like, Cade Horton coming out of this game may have saved the New York Mets. Yes, it's a break. Yes, it's lucky. But if the Mets can take advantage of it and take it the way the Jets did, and take it and grab it and make the playoffs, make everybody pay for it. Like, to a degree, the Jets did. I mean, they didn't make the Colts pay for it. Still have visions of Austin Collie catching that touchdown right before the half. But nevertheless, you got to take advantage of it. So when Cade Horton's out of the game, that's all fine and dandy. I could sit here all day thinking of Jets-Colts comparisons. You got to take advantage of it. You're facing Michael Soroka. Do something. They didn't in the fourth inning, outside of a two-out single by Mark Vientos. And it looked like they were going to do nothing in the fifth inning. But again, they've got to give you something, and then you got to take it. Dansby Swanson, who kicked us in the you-know-whats many times over in Atlanta a few years ago, gave it to us on what could have been an inning-ending double play to end the fifth inning with the Mets down 6-1. And letting that ball go under his glove and Alvarez showing the wherewithal and the hustle to get to second base turned into such a huge moment. But it's not huge if you don't grab it. Lindor hit that ground out to get a run in. I'm thinking to myself, great, at least they got a run in. At least it's 6-2. Soto draws the four-pitch walk. All right, Pete, you've got a chance with one swing to just make it a game. And he hits that Piazza-esque screaming line drive to right center field. And when it went off the top of the fence and Pete only had a single, I'm thinking, damn these baseball gods. Because they're an inch away from it being 6-5. And instead it's 6-3, but there's still two outs. And is Brandon Nimmo actually going to come through, considering he's done nothing over the last couple of days with all those opportunities? But that home run he hit off of Tyler Rogers Jr., also known as his brother Taylor Rogers. That was majestic. That reminded me of the home run he hit against Atlanta in game 161. An incredible three-run home run that changed the trajectory of this game and maybe changed the trajectory of this season. Now, as far as the bullpen is concerned and the way this thing was handled, obviously, like I said, I disagreed with keeping David Peterson as long as he did. Brazoban was clearly the guy you were going to go to in the second inning. I had no problem pulling him when they did. No issue going to Ryan Stanek to get through the fifth inning, which he did. Gregory Soto in the sixth inning, again, managing along. I think that Mendy did the right thing when he pulled him after he gave up the base hit to Nico Horner. Three batter minimum happened. Suzuki coming up. Tyler Rogers was the right guy to go to. So I'm with him with the way he managed kind of the second inning on after the Peterson mistake. What it comes down to with Tyler Rogers, and they're going to need him. They're going to need Tyler Rogers. He is incredibly important. But Tyler Rogers was maybe as bad as we've ever seen him. Because when he comes into this game with a one-run lead, he missed close with Ian Happ. Like, some of those sliders were very close, but they missed. ABS isn't here yet, and I don't even think ABS would have bailed him out. So Tyler Rogers missing with his spots. And when you throw 82 miles an hour, you can't be missing. Saya Suzuki hits one 1,000 miles per hour up the middle, and Tyler Rogers blows the game. Now, credit to him for two things. A, getting out of the inning by getting Carson Kelly on the comebacker, and then B, the at-bat he had versus Michael Bush in the seventh inning of this game was a battle. It was a battle and a half. It was a nine-pitch at-bat, and he somehow won it by getting the ground ball to first base. He gives up the cheap bloop hit to Justin Turner, which I don't know if Cedric Mullins makes that catch. I don't know if Jose Siri makes that catch. I'll get into the Nimmo decision a little bit later on, but Brandon Nimmo gave it his all. Here's the reality. Marte, Nimmo, and Soto, they're not putting that outfield in the Hall of Fame. That is not exactly an outfield that's going to be known for defense. But what this all came down to was after Rogers walked Matt Shaw and Brooks Raley was a no-brainer to come into this game to face PCA, was can they get that big out from Brooks Raley? And he did, with a monstrous strikeout. Now, the decision to go to Edwin Diaz. I'll be honest with you. This is one of those 50-50 calls. Going to Edwin Diaz for a six-out save.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
How can anyone argue it? He is your best pitcher. This is the most important game. Why F around? I was leaning towards giving Raley two batters. Obviously, he would have had to have faced two batters because once he restarts an inning or starts an inning, you are subject to the three-batter minimum. But once the Mets took the two-run lead on the Alvarez bomb, I thought, you know what? I'll give him two batters. I mean, the odds are not high. He's going to just give up back-to-back home runs or a walk in a home run. So either way, I feel good that Diaz is going to get into this game with a lead. So I would have tried to have stolen an out or two from Brooks Raley, but I cannot complain with Carlos Mendoza saying, screw it, I'm going for the jugular. And they needed Edwin Diaz, who has three blown saves this season, tied for a career low. They needed him to respond in the biggest way possible. I've said this about Edwin all year. I trust him. He may blow a save in a big spot. It is certainly possible. He is not perfect. but he will not blow a save in a big spot because the moment is too big. Armando Benitez will. Edwin Diaz won't. If he blows a save, it's going to be the same reason he blows a save in the middle of May. Same reason. But what I've also always said about Edwin Diaz is he'll blow a save. We just have to hope it's not going to happen in the worst possible moment. It's all about timing in life. The Mets were in no position to not only see Edwin Diaz blow a save, they were in no position to then go to extra innings with no one left in this bullpen. Because the only guys they had left was Dickie Lovelady and Ryan Helsley. So that two-run lead, if you blow it, even if it's tied, it feels like a loss. Because I don't know how the hell you're going to be able to find a way to not only score runs, but then get three outs from Ryan Helsley and Dickie Lovelady. They needed Edwin Diaz to be his finest. And not only was Edwin Diaz at his finest, not only does he get a Rivera-esque six-out save, other than sequences in an at-bat in which he's falling behind a hitter, like he did with Carson Kelly to start the ninth inning, he didn't even make a sweat. Strikeout, strikeout, fly out, strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. Two innings, five strikeouts, no one gets on base. Mariano Rivera is the greatest closer in the history of baseball. Nothing will ever change that. He is the god of closers. And a part of what made Mariano so amazing was these two-inning saves he made routine. I would be curious, and I'm going to look it up because I'm that nuts. I'd be curious how many times he had a five-strikeout, six-out save. That is sheer dominance. And that's what Edwin Diaz delivered. Now, the other hero was Francisco Lindor. This was such a fascinating game for Francisco Lindor because I thought of Joe B throughout this game. And the reason I bring up my great partner, Joe Beningo, longtime partner, Joe Beningo, currently joins Tiki and I Mondays at 4 o'clock, is because when Joe came on Monday, he made sure to bash Francisco Alvarez specifically for his defense, saying, you know what? Enough. I've seen enough. Let me see Torrens. And I get it because when Alvarez doesn't hit, when he doesn't hit, Luis Torrens is a better option. He calls a great game, though Alvarez is known for calling a great game too. But Torrens is so automatic at shutting down run games. That's the real reason. And so I thought of Joe because Francisco Alvarez had two moments in the first inning that may be forgotten about, but I am going to bring it up right now, where they could have used Luis Torrens. And Alvarez was 0 for his first two, even though one of his outs was that ground ball to shortstop. So he wasn't hitting until the game-winning home run. But defense in the first inning, think about it. When Nico Horner stole second base, Alvarez was too busy pitch framing to actually try to throw the runner out. Torrens may throw the runner out. And then later on in the inning, when Carson Kelly, one of the slowest guys in baseball, is stealing second base, Alvarez is too confused or too hopeful about a check swing and doesn't throw out one of the slowest runners in baseball. So defensively in that first inning with the two stolen bases against him, and I think there was another stolen base late in the game. Yes, the Kevin Alcantara stolen base when he replaced Justin Turner as a pinch runner. During those stolen bases, but specifically the first two, I'm certainly thinking, boy, they could use Luis Torrens. I'm thinking of Beningo screaming for it. But the reason why ultimately Joe is wrong and I'm wrong when the thought goes through my head and we're all wrong is because of what Alvarez is capable of doing offensively. And I get we're sick of saying it. We're sick of talking about it. Just do it already. The guy's hit 10 home runs this year. He always misses time. He goes through massive slumps. Trust me, we all get the frustration around Francisco Alvarez. But what he did in that eighth inning, that's why you play him. Hitting an absolute bomb through the wind. And they needed that so badly because if he doesn't hit that home run, if the Mets don't go ahead in the top of the eighth inning, everything about this game changes. Like, does Edwin Diaz come in the eighth inning? Probably not. I know he was warming up, but I don't know if he does. And then if he does, are the Mets ever going to score another run? The Mets scored 9 runs in this game. Granted, 4 of them were unearned. But nevertheless, they scored 9 runs in this game. Major props to them. 3 home runs, 3 significant home runs. But one thing I've learned about this Met offense is it can disappear at any moment. So I can't trust them that they're going to tack on a run or two. They needed, desperately needed those two runs in the eighth inning. And they came with two outs. And they came after Starling Marte is trying to surprise everybody with a bunt. There are situations, we talked about this with Francisco Alvarez in the Saturday game against Washington, where, I'm sorry, you have to bunt. Eighth inning, Acuna on first base, Marte at the plate, bottom of the order coming up, is not one of them. So I was not in favor of Marte laying down a bunt. Now, if he gets it down and he beats it out, great. I mean, we'll all celebrate it. But I didn't think that was a must-bunt situation. And it turned into a foul pop-up. And then after McNeil flied out, you get that Alvarez moment hitting that two-run home run. And a shocking, a much-needed, and a DVD kind of victory for the New York Mets, who now control their own destiny. Pete Hoffman, how was your night watching this wonderful DVD win?
I got to be honest with you. Like, I was worried for my health a few times. Watching David Peterson give away that the game in the first two innings was very frustrating. And you could sit there and blame the first two runs on Juan Soto. If he catches that ball, it's a clean inning. No runs. Obviously, base runners on there. But I'm almost happy that that happened, because otherwise – oh, because here's the thing, right? Peterson may have still been in the game, and maybe Mendoza would have kept trying to give Peterson more innings. Well, he got through the first inning. Maybe we need to give him another inning on top of it. Maybe he'll get through the second inning. You're right, dude. Once he walked the first batter to the second inning, that's it. He's done. If they ever use David Peterson ever again to start a game, it is batter by batter. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't think he could start another game. I think if you want to ship him to the bullpen and try to fix him there, the problem is you don't have time to fix anybody. I mean, there's five games left in the season, and the next day David Peterson would be available would probably be Saturday, only because he only threw 42 pitches in this game, but it cannot be as a starter. Like, I think the Mets right now, they've really got two options if they get to Sunday, okay, with that game mattering one way or the other, whether it's they need to win to get in, or they need a win and help to get in. If that game matters, I think they are now down to two options. Splitting up the tag team of Clay Holmes and Sean Manaea, which I wouldn't love doing because it's worked. Like, that tag team has worked twice. They didn't win the other day, and it wasn't because of the tag team. The tag team went 6 2/3 and allowed three runs. That's a successful tag team. They didn't score any runs. But one option is to split up the tag team, and the other option is Kodai Senga. And there's risk to that. I get it. Carlos Mendoza did a podcast earlier today. What was it? Foul Territory. And was asked about Kodai Senga and said he threw a bullpen. He's going to get a couple of days of rest, and we'll see what we need. Well, I'll tell you what you need. What you need is someone not named David Peterson taking the baseball. So you can laugh at Kodai Senga all you want, but those are really the only two options when you look at Sunday. If Sunday matters, obviously, good or bad, it may not matter. It's Senga, or it's splitting up the tag team, or David Peterson. Those three options, which way do you want to go?
Well, I got to be honest with you. What I would do, because he only pitched 42 pitches, and I understand that, you know, are you going to try to throw him back on short rest? I don't know what you're going to do, but I don't want him starting a game. I don't want to go to him in an important situation. But I would almost think about, like, give him a couple days, and if they need a mop-up, maybe he's the guy to go to.
Well, here's what you can do, all right? I think you're going to like this one better, because it's kind of a combo of the things I just suggested. David Peterson will pitch Saturday, so it's 3 days rest. But again, he only threw 42 pitches, so that's not really a thing. He will team up with Clay Holmes. That it will be a new tag team. It'll be Clay Holmes. Give him the start. I give Clay the start. See how he does. David Peterson comes in for those middle innings, and then Sean Manaea gets the Sunday start. Give him a real start. You make a face, but what else do you want to do?
I'm getting Tom Glavine flashbacks, bro. It's terrible.
Sean Manaea is Tom Glavine. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. I mean, I'm. This is going to be a health check for the next 5 days for me. I don't know how I'm going to be able to handle this because this game was back and forth, dude. Watching Jeff McNeil throw the ball away twice, I wanted to punch the wall, and I decided against it. Thank God.
I have a great idea. You know what would be very helpful? How about the Mets win the next 2 days, and maybe the Pirates, with Paul Skeens on the mound, wins one more game, and the Mets could at least go to Miami with a two-game lead. That'd be nice. Or a three-game lead. I mean, that would be amazing.
Didn't the Brewers get crushed today?
What do the Brewers have to do with this?
Well, I'm just saying they're facing the Reds coming up, too.
Oh, so you want – I get what you're saying. You want the Brewer games to matter, so they're still trying to secure – the one seed. You know, I'm not worried about the Brewers not caring because remember this, they're not playing in the wild card series. So they're off Monday, they're off Tuesday, they're off Wednesday, they're off Thursday, they're off Friday. So I think with teams that have divisions won and buys won, they're not really just going to rest people. Why are they resting people? They're about to be off for 5 days. So I'm not overly worried about that. But, yeah, the pitching decisions are going to be interesting. What we do know is that Jonah Tong is going to get the baseball in game two of this series. Nolan McLain was moved up for a few reasons. It gets him on normal rest. It puts him against the tougher competition, but also does line him up if, God forbid, the Mets are in the postseason. Because if the Mets can make the postseason, Ohtani versus Cowboy Ohtani would be the would be the game one pitching matchup. And then I guess from there, Brandon Sproat on Friday. My idea would be Clay Holmes, David Peterson as a tag team, or just Clay Holmes on Saturday, and then Shaw Manai on Sunday. Maybe Kodai Senga is involved. By the way, it shows you that the emotions of tonight are wearing off through the first 40 minutes of the Rico, because early on in the Rico, I think I said, quote, David Peterson cannot pitch again. And by 40 minutes in, I'm like, put him on a tag team with Clay Holmes.
Well, dude, this is what it comes down to. I mean, it's all hands on deck because the hands are very short. They're very limited right now.
They are. Now let's have some fun. Throughout this game, throughout the emotions of this game, people email thericob@gmail.com. So we are going to read emails to describe every part of the game. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Anthony from Boca Raton. I just watched the Juan Soto play in right field. I don't care whether they win or lose anymore. Stick a fork in me. I'm done. See you next season.
That's great.
Joseph from Queens writes, I just turned the game off in the second inning. This team is useless. Wish I could say I won't watch any more baseball, but not this game. I do wonder if Joseph turned the game back on at some point.
Can I just tell you something? In the second inning, I was trying a little experiment. So I did a little TikTok live action. I'd never done it before. It was good. I had some interaction, some good guys, some people on there. And I think that seeing the numbers right now, I think some people jumped on YouTube as well. But it was great because I was trying to go play by play and saying how I can't believe this team is doing this again. And as McNeil starts to throw the baseball around twice, and I can do nothing but laugh. It was just that bad, that inning. It's just like, you can't make it up.
Yeah, and they've had a lot of that recently. I mean, their defense over the last four games, like, I'm glad they won. We're all glad they won. This is a happier edition of the Rico, but we can't sugarcoat the garbage baseball they played. I mean, they've been a bad team for a while, and the defense over the last five games, I mean, it's
not just them, too. It's the Nationals played terrible, well, except for Jacob Young. And Dansby Swanson with the freaking Olay that completely whiffs on a ball.
Look, Dansby Swanson needs to make that plan. It was a very critical error that opened things up for the Mets. But their outfield defense looked great. I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong made a couple of really good plays, had a great jump on a little blooper. Saya Suzuki robbed Rhett Beatty of an extra base hit. So their outfield defense was top-notch. They made one big miscue. But to the Mets' credit, they made him pay. Fred writes, while Juan Soto should have caught that ball and David Peterson shouldn't have started the game, can we talk about Francisco Alvarez? Why is he trying to frame a strike instead of throwing to second? And then how do you not throw Carson freaking Kelly out? The whole point of Alvarez going to AAA was to work on his defensive issues. What happened? Here you go. I hope he also tuned in the eighth inning win. All those opinions are accurate, by the way. Like Fred said, nothing wrong. We addressed it, the Alvarez defensive issues, but you put up with it when you're able to hit. Steven writes, Evan, while the Rico I'm the Man Right Now award for the season will either go to Juan Soto or Edwin Diaz, I won't litigate that here. It is pretty clear at this point that the season's net negative award belongs to David. I think he meant David Peterson. Yes.
I believe that was the end. Yes.
Yes. Sure. He reached a career high in innings earlier in the year, but there was room for reasonable regression. If David Peterson became just a serviceable back end starter, the Mets would have ended up winning two or more games and likely would have already been in the playoffs. Instead, he regressed into a full-blown, unpitchable nightmare for the last 6 weeks of the year and cost them in several huge games down the stretch. Barring a miracle, I think David Peterson has to be the net negative for the season. It's a good question. I think that there are a lot of candidates for the season-ending net negative, but you aren't wrong that him regressing, and he's not the only one, though. Like, David Peterson became unpitchable, and he had some real non-competitive starts in the second half, and he absolutely regressed. But what about Kodai Senga after coming off the injured list? Now, I guess he has an excuse, and maybe that's what makes it better, because he got hurt. But how about pre-injury Kodai Senga and post-injury Kodai Senga? Alex writes, they let everything snowball. One batter gets out, and then suddenly it's 15 straight retired. They lose one game, and then it's a seven-game losing streak. It's been the story of the season since June. Ron writes, it's 5-1 in the bottom of the fourth inning. I'm not mad at Soto. Should he have caught that ball and saved two runs? Yes, absolutely. Kill him if you want, I guess. David Peterson is the real problem. You've been speaking about it. Hoffa's been speaking about it. What happened to this guy? He made the All-Star game this year and forgot how to pitch. Am I missing something? How did he become so bad? I hate this team. I hate sports. Hopefully they win the game. Yeah, little did he know.
Can I tell you something? So I forgot who it was, but somebody emailed you or tweeted at you and I. You probably haven't blocked because you probably block a lot of guys. Just
I don't block anybody. That is not true.
I'm just joking. I'm the one who blocks people. Oh. But that being said, actually just mute people. But anyway, that being said, the one thing that they said was they saw David Peterson the past few starts do a lot of this hip stuff.
Yeah.
Like him like making like wincing on his hip. And a couple of years ago with one of the injuries.
Yeah, the hip surgery. Yes.
Yeah. So is there something going on with the hip that maybe there's an injury that we just don't really know about right now?
It's always possible. And a lot of times we're not going to hear about injuries until after the season. As mad as I am at David Peterson earlier in this podcast saying I don't want to see him pitch again for this team this year, I also said during that emotion, I'm not giving up on him. Like, next year is different than this year. This is this year. We're talking about right now. But in 2026, I don't believe he's some kind of lost cause. And maybe it is an aggravation of his hip. Maybe it's as simple as what we talked about with the innings. But I don't think that this stretch, as bad as it is, and it's bad, and I don't want him pitching again unless it's in a tag team. I probably don't want him on a postseason roster if, dare I say, the Mets make it. But that doesn't mean he's out for good. Let me give you one last negative before we start to read the positive emails. Kyle writes, gut this gutless team. We should just stop right there with that headline. That's great. Gut this gutless team. Mr. Evan Roberts. Ooh, very official. There is no point in having a high payroll with losers who have no heart. It has been proven in baseball time and time again. You don't need the best players in order to be consistently successful. Keep a few cornerstone pillars. Pete, although his goofball demeanor doesn't scream competitor or winner. Lindor, Soto, and Diaz. But everyone else should be gone, ready to go. Nimmo, gone. McNeil, gone. Those noodle-arm starting pitchers, gone. Trust the young kids in the farm, which Stearns would love to do and is more comfortable with anyways. Jet Williams, Carson Benge, Ryan Clifford. Do we think playing those young kids next year could result much worse than what we've seen for 3 months? If you're going to spend money in free agency, it should only be for the Sotos of the world, the elite guys who don't come available every season. Reset the roster and payroll, build organically with the number one ranked farm system, and please drain the swamp of this loser culture. I understand that it is not acceptable in the New York market, but how many times have we seen with the Mets, when they have high expectations, they fail? When they enter a season with no expectations, they overachieve. This team must get younger and must, more importantly, must retain a higher ROI on the players we pay the most. Our young pitchers are exciting, build around them, and the hitting talent in the upper minors pair them with the aforementioned cornerstone players and go from there. Gut this gutless team. I love it. All right. Let's read some positive ones. Though I will warn you, the emails to the Rico B tend to flow in a lot more when bad stuff happens. When good stuff happens, there's a lot less to choose from.
Could I also do one more thing that's a little negative?
Yes.
That Pete Alonso catch that he dropped after he fell through the netting.
Yeah.
Why didn't we challenge it? Like, was it not a catch?
It was not a catch. The ball came out.
But after he fell through the net.
You got to complete the catch. You can't just have the ball in your glove for a split second. He didn't catch the ball.
No, he had the ball, and he was laying on the net, and then he crashed through the net.
Yeah, but he didn't catch the baseball, Pete.
Oh, I don't know.
What do you want me to tell you? He didn't catch the baseball.
This is like a football play where we have to sit there, review the tape, and then make a new rule.
It's not that complicated. He didn't catch it. The ball was in his glove, and then as he was falling, it came out. He just didn't catch the ball.
I don't know. I thought it was after he landed on the floor. I thought his butt was going through.
Well, first of all, that doesn't matter. Like, if you make a diving play and then fall down, and as you're falling to the ground, the ball gets jarred loose, that's not a catch. Like, you have to catch the baseball.
Yeah, but I felt like, okay, that's less my point. Less point on it. I thought he had enough possession time with it where it should have been ruled a catch.
No.
It's like almost like the transfer. Caught it, up, laying on the net, and then I drop it.
I don't know if you or others were watching Reds Pirates, like if you were glued to it. So I went into my TV room, which I don't normally do on a Tuesday night. Like, usually I'm in the bedroom, my wife, maybe one of my kids. I have the Met game on, the Yankee game on. In this case, I said, I'm sorry, baby. I'm going into the big TV room, and I had every baseball game on. I watched that horrible David Fry freak injury. I watched the Yankees' dramatic comeback, the Red Sox helping the Yankees out, and obviously Pirates-Reds. So there was a play in the Pirates-Reds game in which, what's his name, Jack Zadinsky makes this diving play that if he doesn't catch, the Reds come back and tie the game. So I have everything on mute, and then as I'm watching the super slow-mo replay, I notice, the umpire said it was a foul ball. Like, said it wouldn't have been fair. And then you see, wait, I don't think he caught it. I think he trapped it. And they actually reviewed it and overturned it into a foul ball. And in that brief moment, I'm like, oh, crap, the Reds are going to come back. Like, what a moment. And I think the next batter grounded out. So it turned out not to matter, but it went from being like this all-time amazing catch to something that was trapped.
Speaking of all time, I think that no matter what happens the next few days, game 162 on Sunday, it's going to be like an all-time day. Like, it may actually beat football because of how many teams are hanging on by a thread.
Well, let's see, because even though there are so many close races, we still got to get to Sunday with a lot of relevance. There's always a chance everything gets wrapped up on Saturday. But you're right, like, there's that potential with everything going on. Anyhow, let's read some positive ones. Joseph writes, can the Mets save the season? You got to believe. Let's effing go. That was pretty good. Ron writes, they won. Is Diaz one for the series? Every game is a playoff game here on out. I'm not complaining, but Mendoza's managing. But is Diaz done for the rest of the series? Was it worth it? I say yes, but what do we do tomorrow and Thursday when we need three outs late in the game? Also, David Peterson is cooked. More than a well-done steak. Never again. Please, this guy's LD on the mound. I would guess with Edwin Diaz, I would guess that he's not going to be available for Wednesday's game, but I think they would make him available for Thursday's game. That would be my guess, because I do think it's desperation time. I think what makes game two of this series challenging is that you don't know what you're getting from Jonah Tong. Jonah Tong's last start was really good, but we do not know what he's going to give you in his next start. Matthew Boyd's obviously a tough customer on the other side. In terms of bullpen availability, they're going to make roster moves, so we know there'll be fresh arms here. So forget Brazoban. He probably won't even be here. But I think that every single person that was used in the game on Tuesday, will be available except for Edwin Diaz. Like, Brooks rarely faced one batter. So he's available. Tyler Rogers is always available. So he'll be available. Gregory Soto faced three batters. I think he'll be available. Ryan Static only threw an inning. He'll be available. So I think other than Diaz, not that that makes us feel much better because Edwin Diaz is so important, but I think everyone else will be available. And then I'm going to make the assumption in the finale of this series. Now, maybe it'll be depending on what happens next. Like if the Mets win and they get more help from Pittsburgh with Paul Skenes on the mound, does that change Mendy's thinking a little bit on Thursday? Maybe. Maybe he's thinking, all right, I got a little bit of a cushion. Let me get him even fresher for the weekend against Miami. But I don't think we lose him for the series. And is it worth it? They needed this win. They needed this win. My thinking on going with Raley to start the eighth inning was not about saving Edwin Diaz for game two or game three. It was more, can I steal an out from Brooks Raley? Mike from Tampa writes, when Soto sucks, the Mets win. Am I the only Mets fan out there who has noticed that when Juan Soto has a mediocre to subpar performance, the Mets win in a majority of their games? It's like the rest of the team stops playing when Soto comes out blazing. This team reminds me more of 2024, which is a team that has each other's backs. Not sure how this season ends up, but the modern-day Juan Soto is a chemistry killer. Yeah, I don't think that's fair at all. I don't think there's any connection. I know that there have been a lot of great Soto moments and losses, but I don't think that's related to anything with position players thinking, oh, well, Juan's doing it for us. I think that's just coincidental. Junior writes, Evan and Pete, wow, 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 wow. What an effing game, all the emotions. From Peterson not having it, to going down 5-1, to coming back to win 9-7, what a win. If they get in, this is the game of the year. Absolutely. David writes, four letters, one word. LFGM. Yes. Mark writes, are we back? Evan, for at least one night, we got traded to some 2024-esque Mets baseball, and it was when we all expected it the least. This was hands down the best game of the season, and hopefully it sparks some Mets magic to end the regular season. However, I am still cautiously optimistic and would not be surprised if we flip-flop with the Reds tomorrow. Well, nobody would be surprised by that. I mean, after what we saw this season, like, why would any of us be surprised if that happens? Alejandro writes, I choose to believe. Hey, Evan, first-time mailer, long-time listener. I know there's a lot of pessimism about this team, and justifiably so, but I choose to believe in them. They haven't put all the pieces together, but we know this team is greater than what we've seen in the sum of its parts. We all know the playoffs are a clean slate, and I think that's what this team needs more than anything. Just get in, get behind the kids, let it ride. Yeah, look, my attitude all year has been, despite these bad moments and really this bad run they've been on, just get it. Not that I think magic's going to happen, not that I actually believe great stuff's going to happen, but I've seen enough, not just in this new era of three wild cards, but even before that, that get in, get hot at the right time, and anything could happen. And I think we're all longing to see Juan Soto in the playoffs as a Met. Pete Alonso getting another crack at it as a Met. And even lately, the idea of Nolan McLean in the playoffs as a Met. So we got work to do over these next five games, but at least we now know, yet again, that if the Mets win their games, they make the postseason. And that's a better spot to be in than the spot we were in 3 hours ago.
You know, it's funny because I do believe, and I've been the most pessimistic. I said this a couple weeks ago that I didn't think the Mets were making the playoffs. I do believe, though, if they make it to the playoffs, that is the right, like, they're going to have to earn it. Like, these next few games, they're not just going to go and, oh, well, they go 2-3 and the Reds go 1-4 and they sneak in. No, they're going to have to win games almost every day. And to me, that is catching fire at the right time, and well, anything can happen.
I tend to agree, at least for our own sake, that they have to win games. Like, obviously, they needed this game. The one thing I do not know, and I've said this all year, about Cincinnati, Arizona, and whoever else has been chasing us in the moment, really over the last few weeks, is I don't know. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if the Reds won every game the rest of the year, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they didn't. Like, they're an average team. I mean, the Reds are what they are. They're an average baseball team. The Diamondbacks are an average baseball team, but just because they're average doesn't mean they can't win their last eight games. Doesn't mean they can't get hot at the right time. So as we sit here right now with five games to go, would it shock me if Cincinnati lost four out of their last five games? No. Like, in the midst of positive Tommy saying all sorts of BS things about the Mets that he probably doesn't believe, he did say something that was so true. It really was. And it wasn't even about the Mets, which I guess is kind of ironic. He said, how do we know how the Reds are going to react to now being the chasee? How do we know? They're a 500 team who all year long has been the little engine that could. Now in their own building against a last place team, it's all in front of them. What are they going to do about it? And I even admitted when he said, I said, it's a great point. Like, I don't know. Like, could the Reds spit the bit? Of course they can. Can they win their finals five games? Of course they can. We don't know. I just know that life would be easier if the Mets win their games. That's what I know. I know that if the Mets win, I don't have to overthink the Reds and what they're going to do over the last five games. But well, they responded in their own building by losing to the Pittsburgh Pirates at home. Like, that's how they began, destiny being in their own hands. And now for the Reds, destiny is not in their hands. It's in our hands. So I don't know, to your point, Hoff, what the Reds are going to do over their final five games, what the Diamondbacks are going to do over their last five games. So is it possible the Mets could lose two out of three to Miami, win two out of three against Chicago, and still make the playoffs? Sure. Because we don't know what these other teams are going to necessarily do.
Well, this is why I said, too, like the same thing that Tommy said about the Reds, same thing I said about the Mets. I'm like, I want to see if this team has any fight at all. They need to be out of the playoffs for them maybe to light a match under their ass. And I know it's just one game, but it definitely felt like they had fight. Like Nimmo and Alvarez and Lindor, it did feel, even Alonso's hit, like it felt like this team, offensively speaking,
hey,
came alive.
They fought back. Give them credit. They were losing a game 6-1. They took advantage of Chicago miscues, and they fought back. And that's why we can celebrate. And you know, you can celebrate your highlights and all the Mets highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser, light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name, a new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan, the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly. By the way, I do have to find this, but we do, right here on the Rico Bronya, our pick segment. And we were talking the other day about how has it gone so far? Like, have my picks been accurate? And Dan, a loyal listener to the Rico and Evan and Tiki, compiled all of my picks and gave me my record. So before we start our picks, brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, make every moment more, let me search for it in my email, because it's very, very tough to find with all of these emails that has come over the last few hours. But they were actually pretty good. All right, here we go. I have it in front of me. The Rico Bronya Bet Tracker. We've made 9 picks. We've won 5 of them. Okay, Lindor anytime home run, which was not an even bet, obviously. I think it was like plus 550. Soto steal, didn't get that one right. Under on Senga innings, got that one right. Over on McLain strikeouts, got that right. Over on Cabrera strikeouts, got that one wrong. A Juan Soto steal, got that one wrong. Over on Nolan McLain strikeouts, got that one wrong. And then one with DeGrom under on K's and the over-under from a recent game. So overall, 5 wins and 4 losses. And that's my record.
And can I tell you something? One of those losses, the Soto stolen base, he actually stole and would have been safe. Pete Alonso fouled the pitch off.
I know. But guess what? A loss is a loss.
No? All right.
I'm just being fair. But for Tuesday or Wednesday's game, game 2 of this series, the Matthew Boyd versus Jonah Tong game, a very low over-under of 7. I expect there to be offense, so I'm going to take the over. Maybe not as much as we saw in this game with 16 runs being scored. But I think Tong will get hit a little bit, and I think the Mets will actually hit Matthew Boyd. I don't know how much, but I'll take the over, which is sitting at 7. So there you go. Once again, that was the pick segment brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. We are promising you Rico Bronyas after every one of these games until either the season is over or the Mets are in the playoffs. So when you consume Wednesday's game, understand we'll be ready to go soon after the game is over, and hopefully it'll be another happy Rico Bronya. But one last thing. Were you able to get the audio I sent you, Pete Hoffman? Because there is a clip that if you didn't hear, you got to hear this. So after Francisco Lindor drove in the lead run in the sixth inning to give the Mets the 7-6 lead that they would eventually blow, Gary Cohen, who I thought was very homerific in this game, there was a lot of homering kind of calls by Gary Cohen, which is fine. Not against it at all. And by the way, Todd Zeal was in a tough spot. For everyone ripping Todd Zeal, listen, Todd is solid. He's just not Keith or Ron. So it's tough to kill him. But Keith got sick. Ron was doing TBS. A tricky spot for Todd Zeal, to say the least. But after Francisco Lindor hit the RBI single that gave the Mets the lead, his third RBI of the game, listen to this call by Gary Cohen.
He's here, he's there, he's every bleeping where. When the chips are down, Lindor's the man.
Is that a quote from a movie or something? I'm not familiar with it. He's every bleeping where? Did Gary Cohen rip out a bleeping? Either way, great call, great victory, but great victories only matter if you build on it. And we'll see if the Mets are able to do that. Thank you very much for listening, downloading, and subscribing. Another edition, episode 555 of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.